Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Talking City, where we will discuss a bit of the Arsenal game, but I mean, we don't want to discuss too much because there's not that much to discuss, but the latest on the title race after that Arsenal game and a few other bits. My name's Simon Bykoski and I'm joined today by Tyrone Marshall. How are we, Ty?
I'm good, thank you, Si. I'm good. Yeah. We've just been joking about what a disappointing game, shall we say, it was on Sunday, given the billing.
I feel like City have made a habit of being involved in a lot of these games, and the games have been really good, the games have been really good, often against Liverpool, but also Arsenal last year, both games were terrific. This game, you know, it could be called a chess match, could be an intriguing tactical battle, or it could just be called pretty naff.
Yeah, I mean, I would go with the last one. I didn't think it was... Sometimes you get nil-nils that are good nil-nils, two teams playing at their highest level, and they are, you know, one for the hipsters, an intriguing tactical battle. This wasn't an intriguing tactical battle for me. It was just two teams that I didn't think were anywhere near their best on the day. You know, Arsenal came to spoil it, didn't they? It probably was a chess match, I guess. And I was joking to a few people afterwards. I mean, Mikel Arteta walked into his press conference and the first thing he said was, it was a thrilling match. And it was such an incredible statement that people actually laughed in the press conference room just through impulse, really, that he was saying it. But I bet he thinks it was an incredible game because these managers now, like Arteta and Guardiola especially, and that breed of managers, are so intensely involved in the game.
Yeah.
He would have seen every little move and been like, that was thrilling being involved in that. And we're in the press box like, oh, nearly over yet. I didn't think it had any real redeeming features, to be honest.
No, because there are sort of, you know, tactical battles that can be quite interesting.
Yeah.
And like just last month, City at Liverpool was really quite interesting. It was only 1-1. There wasn't that much goal mouth action, but it was a case of sort of City sort of having the edge on Liverpool in the first half, and then Liverpool kind of tweaking the way they played. Joe Gomez pushed forward into midfield, and they really brought the storm second half. And it you could sort of, you know, you could appreciate the tactical side of the game.
Yeah.
And also kind of the in-game changes, whereas this just felt like from the outset, City said, we're not really going to push this to win.
Yeah.
And Arsenal said, we're not really going to push this to win. Is that doing it down? Is it that they were both trying to win, but they were both so evenly matched and sort of good at cancelling the other out that it looked like there wasn't trying or...
Maybe. I mean, I think Arsenal, you've got to give credit to Arsenal. You know, you mentioned those two games last year. You know, certainly the one at the Etihad was a great game because City were great. You know, Arsenal just couldn't cope with City that night. And, you know, you look back, I mean, Arsenal was still top of the league that night. I think they had six left maybe and City had seven. But we all left the stadium that night going, well, City going to win the league. It's over. It's done. It was such a big psychological blow. It was. And on this occasion, you could tell they have learnt, they have improved. It was a real streetwise performance. It was an edgy performance with all the fouls. You know, I think Anthony Taylor helped them with not booking anyone for those fouls. And it did give us the wonderful irony of a City player complaining about tactical fouling in the mix zone, which was quite nice. But no, I think, and you know, you're right what you say. I said it in my piece after the game that the last kind of 25 minutes felt like City's best spell in the game. In that they were, you know, the tilt of the play was getting closer and closer to Arsenal's goal, but still without creating anything really. And we were talking afterwards when, you know, you're writing little pieces around the press conference and you're like, City's best chance. What was City's best chance? And you think it's probably got to be that Ake header because they didn't really have another chance. And it felt to me like a game at the end that City. You know, we kind of talked about this on Friday at the press conference. It's a game City couldn't afford to lose, really.
Yeah.
4 points behind both of those two teams would have made it incredibly difficult to catch them both, I think.
Yeah.
So it was a game they couldn't afford to lose, which conversely, in the last 20 minutes, made it a game that they didn't really want to risk winning too much either. You know, there was one moment where Arsenal broke, where Trossard got the final pass wrong, I think. And that was probably a warning as well to City that, right, we want to win this game. but we can't throw men forward, you know, to win it.
Yeah,
as aggressively as we would have done if it was the first minute or anything like that, you know. And they got better as the game went on. They got more. They had more territory as the game went on. But it also meant that the closer it got to the final whistle, the more that danger of losing the game probably seeped into their consciousness.
What was Arsenal's best chance? Like, it seems to me Arsenal produced the performance that kind of Everton and Sheffield United and Burnley want to produce when they go to the Etihad, and that is 10 outfield players as compact as possible in the spaces, in the third, basically, yeah, defending their goal for their lives. And because Arsenal have better players than Everton and Sheffield United,
yeah,
they were able to keep City out better than those teams are. Yeah. But it didn't, you know, we can talk about how it was a sensible performance from Arsenal and, you know, they earned their point where, I think it's the first point they've got at the Etihad in Guardiola's time there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it didn't smack to me of a team that wants to win the title. It smacked to me of a team that wanted to get a point.
Yeah, and that's kind of been the interesting thing after the game that, you know, the narrative, and certainly the one I've seen from City fans is that, in a way, Arsenal might look back and think this was a wasted opportunity because it was a weakened City. It was a City that weren't playing particularly well.
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned the tactical thing before. It felt like nothing really changed tactically. And I know, sitting in the press box, a few of us were surprised when Pep bought Grealish and Doku on.
Yeah.
I think a few thought De Bruyne would go off and he'd play Foden centrally and that's the one thing that could have changed that game.
Yeah.
And it didn't. But you're right, Arsenal, you know, it was very obvious early on that there was just no space around the edge of the area. And when City did find the space, De Bruyne just had a poor game and couldn't, till the last 15 minutes, he kind of half came alive. But before that, I thought, you know, he had a difficult game. And you're right that it was that kind of game plan where there was a lot of fouls, a lot of slowing the game down, real congestion, and they have just got better players. And I mean, I was looking at the time and thinking, now, Gabriel and Saliba is an excellent centre-back partnership, but they play together every single week.
Yeah.
I'd love to know how many league games have started together this year. It might be all of them.
Yeah.
It feels like it's all of them. And you look at the number of changes City have had to make at centre-back, Liverpool have had to make at centre-back, even United have had to make at centre-back this year. You know, Arsenal have had a lot of good fortune to have those two together.
Tottenham and Villa as well, actually.
Tottenham and Villa, yeah. And, you know, injuries have been a narrative of this season. You never know an injuries like it across every team. But it probably hasn't really affected Arsenal. And talk about their best chance. It's probably Jesus' volley in the first half or the one he didn't quite connect with at the start of the second half. I don't think there was anything better than that. And, you know, you can't recall either keeper making a save that demanded anything more than sort of regulation from them.
And we talk about injuries. City kind of not helped by the international break. Mm-hmm. So it meant they had no Kyle Walker, no John Stones, no Edison. That's sort of three of the back five that would potentially start this game. And then in the game, first half, Ake goes down injured and has to come off. So Rico Lewis comes on. How did that kind of change anything for City?
It didn't feel like it changed an awful lot. I thought Lewis did pretty well, and I actually thought Akanji was doing really well at right back, actually. And
maybe that
was the most obvious change, because Akanji was getting forward well from right back, which Guardiola did from left back as well. I mean, it was one of Guardiola's best games for City. And it was clear that they were playing a very narrow midfield. Foden and Bernardo were really tucked in field and relying on those fullbacks for width. I mean, both aren't really fullbacks, but when Lewis came on, he kind of moved narrow as well as probably his role is. And, you know, City lost what width they had probably when Akanji moved forward. I thought Akanji had a good game as well, but they did lose that width. And when the centre is so congested, you probably needed width in that game, and City just lacked for it. I mean, some of their most promising moments probably came when Guardiola had the ball and had good positions advanced down the left, but it never really felt like they were creating anything from out wide at all.
And I mean, City probably would have done better, right, if they hadn't had a League Two striker up front.
Would help, wouldn't it? It would certainly help, yeah. The claims that Alvarez should have started that game instead of Haaland were interesting. I mean, Arsenal did a good job on him. Gabriel and Saliba clearly did a very good job on him and totally denied him space. You just can't read anything into it with Haaland. I mean, I said during the late in the first half, I can't remember a game where he's been less involved, but there have been plenty of games where you get to half-time and he's barely involved.
Yeah.
And then he pops up and scores. So the kind of, you know, the analysis around Haaland when, like, oh, he's not getting involved, he's not getting a touch, it's kind of irrelevant because that's just what he does. And then he pops up and scores a goal. And, you know, this time he didn't get a chance. I think he had one-headed chance. West Ham wasn't even really a chance because he couldn't reach it in the first half that he got his head to.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I mean, maybe the best one was from the corner where Vardiol flicked it on and he seemed to go for it and then stop. I don't know if he thought he was close to the post or something. But yeah, beyond that, you know, he had a tough afternoon, but he's a striker that relies on service, isn't he? He had no space to create anything for himself. And
no, service. And he did feel like that. And not to sort of be a fully paid up member of the Haaland fan club, but he's up against two of the best centre-backs in Europe. And he did occupy them. Like, it wasn't like he was so little threat that Gabriel and Saliba could just waltz up the pitch and forget about him. Like, you know, they marked him really well, but he needed marking.
He did, yeah. And he occupied both of them at times and pulled Arsenal's midfield deeper. And it's, you know, you think about it now, I mean, maybe he occupied them so much that what City needed was an Alvarez coming on and, you know, putting Foden central and trying to get those kind of third man runs that, for all De Bruyne's quality there, he doesn't really do. You know, he's the one delivering the balls into the box, whereas Foden does sometimes go beyond Haaland. He'll look to play those little 1-2s around the box, and that felt like the biggest missed opportunity for City. I mean, Foden and De Bruyne weren't great, but it felt like if you were going to change it tactically, it was play Foden in the middle. And you know, he's great in those tight spaces. A 1-2 with Haaland, something like that might come off. But it probably also shows that Guardiola just felt that a 0-0 wasn't disastrous, and that while he wanted to win the game, he didn't want to win it so much that he was going to risk losing it.
See, I watched the game and I felt like the sort of the conversation that probably is emerging again and is sort of De Bruyne versus Foden, because Foden's been coming through in the middle. De Bruyne's still the master, we know he's still got it, but he's not been great for a while, and Foden's been very, very good and likes playing in the middle. But when they both play together, Foden tends to get shunted out wide because he's more versatile and because he trusts De Bruyne in the middle. So it felt like it was kind of a, oh, you know, is it, do we need to bring Foden in? And or like you say, take De Bruyne off and bring Foden off. Instead, there was loads about Erling Haaland, and I don't want to bury Roy Keane, so I've got his quote here. Well, I do want to bury Roy Keane, but I
just don't want him to know about it.
Yeah, yeah. So he said about Haaland, in front of goal, he's the best in the world, but for his general play, for such a player, it is so poor. He's almost like a League Two player. And I mean, I'm going to get on my soapbox, but like, first off, in front of goal is the best in the world. Well, in front of goal is so much of the game.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's finishing.
That's what you're there for.
Yeah, but it's acceleration, it's pace, it's technique, it's awareness. You know, so I sort of tweeted about this yesterday and people say, oh, Cruyff said the same about Pippo Inzaghi. And it's like, yeah, but like, you just can't write off. Like, I think Cruyff said, oh, he's just like, he's there all the time, ready to tuck it in. Yeah. Like, that's not by accident. That is a skill. Yeah. Haaland is like off the scale on all of these things.
Yeah.
And, you know, funnily enough, I feel like this season, Haaland's performances, he's actually been better with his link-up play and worse with his finishing. Yeah, like, if Haaland had taken some of the chances that he would have done last season, City would have been better off than they are. And, you know, he's got 5 assists this season, which in the league, which is, you know, pretty good. He's sort of, his assists in the Premier League, I think he's like he's getting an assist twice as quickly as Roy Keane did.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like criticism of Haaland this season is fine, but to sort of call him a League Two player,
yeah,
it just misses the point.
It's classic Keane punditry in a way.
Let's
clip this up. And, you know, you can, I mean, if they want to argue he had a poor game, that's fine, argue it. But like we say, it's just such a strange argument to have that there is no debate about Haaland's place in that team at all. And, you know, I can't remember what press conference it was, but there was quite a bit about Haaland at a recent press conference, and it's like he's missed the most big chances in the league this season and last season.
Yeah.
But also scored the most goals, which shows the number of chances he does get, a lot of which are created for him. But, you know, he's, like you say, being in the right position is a phenomenal skill. Occupying defenders, getting between the defenders, finding that space, and finding that space in congested penalty areas, because Arsenal aren't the only team, as we've said, that defend very deep against City, and Haaland still finds space in the penalty area to score. So,
I mean, there was that chance in the first minute, wasn't there? I think he was offside.
Yeah,
but like, if he's not offside, it's a penalty.
Yeah. And we were right in line with that. You could tell it was offside.
Yeah.
It never happened again that he threatened to get in behind or anything like that. But yeah, it's just not a debate, is it? And you're right, the big debate at the moment is probably De Bruyne or Foden, because it feels like we're coming to the end of...
Well, it's the service for Haaland, isn't it? Someone needs to supply Haaland.
Needs to supply him. And, you know, I mean, I was doing the ratings and it felt like one of those games where it's just everyone is a 6 or 7.
Yeah.
But when I had them... You know, you go through them kind of 65 minutes maybe and start trying to get them ready. And I had De Bruyne at 5 at that point, because I just thought he'd been really disappointing on the occasions he had got the ball. But then, like I say, the last 15 minutes, he kind of drifted more to the left, got a bit more involved, kind of drove City forward, coincided with their best spell. In the end, you're like, you know, maybe that bumps him up to a 6. But, you know, he didn't influence that game at all, I don't think. And... I'd love to have seen the last half an hour of that game with Foden moved centrally. And it felt telling that although he played on the left, this wasn't like Leroy Sané on the left, was it? It was very much move in field and give that flag to Kvaratskhelia. And we even saw with England, he played on the left for England against Belgium on the Tuesday night. And then at half time, Southgate made a bit of a tactical change, got him more centrally. And the difference in the way Foden influenced that England game in the second half compared to the first was incredible.
Yeah.
Like, just saw so much more of the ball. And suddenly England looked so much more dangerous. And that would have been harder to do against Arsenal, clearly, given how congested that area was. But you'd have liked to have seen it, I think.
Yes. Well, that is it for part one. We've exhausted the 0-0 draw. But we'll return for part two, where we'll talk about where it leaves City in the title race. Hello, welcome back. Part two of the Talking City podcast. And City's 0-0 draw with Arsenal means that they are third in the Premier League table, which is where they were when they kicked off. But, you know, there will have been some celebrations for former United player Danny Welbeck when he gave Brighton the lead at Anfield. But Liverpool came back to win in the early kickoff on Sunday. So City remain a point behind Arsenal, but are now 3 points behind Liverpool with 9 games to go. So how are we feeling?
it's so hard to call, isn't it? There was Arsenal and City staff in the press room at the Etihad enjoying their lunch when Welbeck scored, and it's fair to say there were a few cheers when that goal went in. But I mean, we've seen that with Liverpool so often this season, the amount of times.
I think no one's done it better, have they?
No, 24, 25 points. 13 games they've gone behind in this season in the league.
Out of 29.
29 is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
But yeah, they do. They seem to pull it back so often.
I mean, they had the whole game too as well.
They did have the whole game too, yeah. And that was, it was the fact it was so early.
Yeah, and you kind of know you're going to score against Brighton as well. Yeah, you know they're going to give you.
Brighton have got a lot of chances, aren't they? So I think everyone thought this, you know, there is a long, long way to go here.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just so, so difficult to call. And, you know, I was driving home and having a WhatsApp chat with some mates. I wasn't, obviously, I was getting messages about the state of the title race.
Yeah.
And I thought, I wonder what the bookies odds are. Because if I was a bookmaker, I don't think I could call it. In a way, I feel like each team has got a 33% chance of winning.
Yeah,
at the moment.
Yeah.
It's so hard to call.
I think I've seen something from Opta with their data that says, I think it's kind of Liverpool 40-something, City 30-something, and Arsenal 20-something.
Yeah.
I think that's probably about where I'm at.
That's basically what the bookmakers said when I got back and looked at the odds that Liverpool were favourites, City were second and Arsenal were third, but very, very little between them. I guess that is probably right. It's so intriguing because you've got City's experience of winning the league 3 years in a row. They've been here before. They've done it before. Arsenal haven't. And I know, you know, me and Guardiola seem to have very different views on this. And I think part of it is him trying to put the pressure on Arteta and Arsenal. But
yeah,
he said it last year and he said it again on Friday, that winning your first title is easy. And I think it's easy if you win it when you're miles clear. And that has tended, like Chelsea in 2005, you know, the one that doesn't really fit that narrative is City in 2012. And in hindsight, that's an even better achievement. You know, going toe-to-toe with a team who were serious and get over the line.
Yeah.
And like, they got, you know, they almost blew it on the last day, but they did get over the line. But beyond that, like Liverpool in 2020, was it?
Yeah.
One going away.
City 2017.
First under Pep. And it had only been 4 years without the title, but there was pressure on that team because of Guardiola and the investment.
Yeah.
And they won it streaking away.
Yeah.
And all of those teams won their first, those teams won their first title easily, you know, on the bridle, basically. You know, they didn't get to March or April and think, this is tense. It was like, when are we going to win it?
Yeah.
And I think it's so much harder when you're in a really tight race to do it, because I mean, maybe Arsenal have learnt from last year, but I think last year also shows how difficult it is.
Yeah, and I have to give credit to Arsenal, because I mean, our producer will verify that at the start of the season I said Liverpool would be City's biggest challengers, but I thought Arsenal would fall off, and especially when they had that wobble in December, because you know, a bit like Liverpool did well, a few seasons when they've been challenging City, but when you go so hard, and Arsenal led the league for so long last year and then didn't make it, and they crumbled, and you know, I think Gabriel Jesus admitted like they just played with too much pressure.
Yeah.
It's so hard to rev yourself back up again. And then when you fall in December, they have been outstanding in 2024.
Definitely.
To get themselves back into it and to be ahead of City at this point. Mm. Like, it is, the league this year has been really, really, really tough.
Yeah, it has. It has. And like you say, I think when they, you know, they lost two in a row, didn't they, in December, in a generally tough December. I think when they lost those two games, I think everyone wrote them off. Everyone thought they were done. And then suddenly, like you say, they've been not just the best team, but probably the best team by distance. Like, they've been thrashing teams.
Yeah,
and thrashing them in a, like, such a dominant style. Like, the way they've boxed teams in in recent games has been breathtaking. But there is still that question for me that they were amazing last year and they won three of their last nine games.
Yeah.
And is there still a game here where they don't win? You know, Luton on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Do they throw in a 1-1?
Yeah.
This is the question for me. And it's not as obvious with Liverpool, because obviously that team has won the league recently under Klopp. It's a newish team. There is, you know, it's the midfield especially is an inexperienced team. Probably won no certainly no major titles between them. But there are still experienced players there. It's certainly a question for Arsenal. I mean, Liverpool probably have the best run in, I guess.
I think for me, for Arsenal, like you say, they have been blowing teams away. And if they win the league, they're two games against City where they've set up really, really defensively and they've got 4 points because of one deflected goal. Like, City under Pep have changed this league. Mm. And they've changed the league from you have to go loads of games unbeaten to you have to win loads of games. You have to win probably 30 games if you want to.
Yeah, yeah.
And the lack of ambition in both games from Arsenal, I kind of find a bit disappointing.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if they win the title, they will be worthy winners. All three will be worthy winners. Mm. But like you say, City were kind of there for the talking on We're here for the talking. And yeah, like, you know, no one really wants to see like a 5-2-3 in your own half when you're challenging for the title.
No, they don't. Those two City Arsenal games have kind of felt like what these games between title challenge yeah. the Lions felt like used in the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
When they were never...
Mourinho Benitez
kind yeah,
of.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, they were never... They were very rarely free-scoring thrillers. Now, they were like,
and that was
horrible.
What, that was what Fergie used to do, isn't it? He'd keep yeah. it tight against the top teams and then batter the
yeah,
rest.
Exactly.
And that was how
yeah.
he won the league.
You know, so many of... I mean, Ferguson Wenger, you know, a lot of those games were probably tight and tense at the peak of it.
Yeah.
And like you say, City have changed it. And Liverpool, in a way, you know, the games, they never produce stinkers, do they, City and
no,
Liverpool?
No, no.
And they're both going for the title, and they're always classics. But Arsenal have clearly,
yeah.
whether it's something that stung from last year, that they've taken this approach
yeah.
to
yeah,
just
yeah.
shut them down and make it and, grim.
And they have battered other teams, so,
yeah.
you know, they have.
They have battered other teams, and they... You know, in a way, it's quite... Arsenal and Newcastle seem to have this, like, rivalry of that's developed between Arteta and Howe and this, like...
Yeah.
Been a few controversial incidents there. But Arsenal are basically doing what Newcastle do to them,
yeah.
City.
Yeah,
they're,
yeah.
They're just kicking them.
Yeah.
They're rotating the fouls around. They're slowing the game down. They're wasting time.
Yeah.
And it has worked for them. And yeah. you look... You know, I said in... The interesting thing for City is that they're not beating any of those teams this
no,
year, and that is
no.
so rare for City.
Yeah, yeah.
They normally
yeah.
land a blow on a title rival at some point.
Yeah.
And they've not done. And you look at last season, they won the league by 5 points and they beat Arsenal home and away. You know,
yeah.
It's a...
And that was the difference as well.
It was the difference,
like,
basically.
If they lost to Arsenal at the Emirates, they thought they were out.
Yeah.
And winning and beating them in April at home felt like they'd won the title.
Yeah, felt like they'd won it. And it's...
Yeah,
it's hard over a 38-game season to know exactly when the defining moment arrives.
Yeah.
And the games closer to the end always feel more important. But it might be that it's the first game you look back on and think we didn't have so-and-so available and we lost and messed it up or whatever. But those games last season, when you take 6 points off Arsenal and you win it by five,
yeah,
fairly obvious to look at. And this year, like we say, City haven't beaten any of those, but they've also, you know, they've drawn with Tottenham, they've lost to Villa. There was the stat doing the round, you know, slightly contrived about top five this year. They've taken 4 points.
Yeah.
Still got two games to go. But it does show that they have, you know, they are relying on others now, aren't they?
Yeah.
City. And that's unusual in a way for them. To this stage of last season, they were probably still relying on others. I think Arsenal slipped up just before that City game and then it was in City's hands and they didn't let it slip. But they have, you know, by failing.
Like what you did there.
Yeah, slip. Yeah. but by failing to beat Liverpool, and they should have won that Etihad game,
yeah.
by failing to beat Arsenal at any point in this season, they have left themselves needing a favour,
yeah.
basically.
Let's talk Liverpool, because they are top of the league, 2 points ahead of Arsenal, 3 points ahead of City. Their goal difference is worse than Arsenal's, but it's 5 goals better than City's. So City... As well as being a win behind Liverpool, they're also kind of an extra point. It's almost 4 points
yeah.
behind them. Although, you know, if they win and Liverpool lose, then that will close.
Yeah.
But you've kind of got to be looking at Liverpool having to drop points in more than one game, I think.
Probably. I mean, they've got Sheffield United on Thursday, haven't they? And if they
yeah.
win that 4 or 5 nil, then that's probably.
I feel like the big one for City fans is Sunday the 7th of April... Manchester United versus Liverpool.
Yeah.
Because for whatever reason, Erik ten Hag and his bewildering bunch of underperforming stars just seem to have this thing about Liverpool. I know they lost 7-0 last season, but they beat him in the FA Cup.
Yeah.
They got a 0-0 at Anfield this season. There's something about United that still kind of sticks in that Liverpool machine.
Yeah.
And it is at Old Trafford. Looking through sort of Palace at home after that, Fulham away, Everton away, so the Merseyside derby. I thought they were in the FA Cup semis. The
Tottenham at home, aren't they? Still got
West Ham away, which could be. Tottenham at home, Villa away, Wolves at home. So, I mean...
It's not as easy a run in.
Yeah.
I mean, if they beat United... Then obviously this run of Sheffield United, United Palace is a chance to really...
Yeah, and Fulham.
The pressure on Fulham.
Yeah, but I mean, Everton they should be as well, but Everton will be scrapping for their lives.
Yeah, and it's obviously a derby, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, I mean, those away games at Villa and West Ham won't be easy. But the United one this weekend is going to be interesting. A mate of mine who's a Liverpool fan messaged me on Saturday night, actually, after United's
masterclass at Brentford. Very similar to a City performance, according to the manager. And I basically tweeted saying how just horrendous I thought it was.
Yeah.
Either it was their worst performance of the season. And my mate screenshotted this tweet and sent it to me about, and said, you know, how much he'd enjoyed it and whatnot.
Yeah.
But then he basically said, if Liverpool don't beat United across three games this season, they don't deserve to win the league.
Yeah.
You can kind of see the argument.
Yeah.
They are this bad, and Liverpool have drawn at home with them and lost away in the FA Cup. And, you know, the way United play, I've seen quite a bit of United this year with doing both clubs, and they're just so poor. And obviously in the press room at City beforehand, a few of us who cover both clubs in Manchester were talking about that Brentford game, and
you
know, I was making the argument that it was their worst performance of the season. You know, people were mentioning losing 3-0 at home to Bournemouth, which is obviously not great.
Yeah. Well, United famously lost 4-0 to Brentford last season.
They were miles better that day.
Well, precisely. Yeah. I feel like Thomas Frank has had it a lot. I'm surprised he's still got hair left, because he tends to have it against United where his team absolutely batter them and they rarely get a win.
Yeah.
So when they sort of went behind in the 96th minute, he must have been sort of ready to resign on the spot.
Yeah, I mean, I was at City at the weekend, so I was watching that at home. I was angry for them. To be honest, it was such an injustice. Yeah. I could like feel my blood boiling, and I was like, this is ridiculous that they are, and having done it to Brentford at Old Trafford with two much
and for Ten Hag to then come out afterwards and say, well, you can't say, you know, don't do Brentford down because City were really lucky against them. And remembering sort of Mark Flecken's world-class performance that meant they only conceded three.
Yes. But that is a United team that, for me, forget about chasing the Champions League, they're lucky to be sixth.
Yeah.
They are the 8th to 10th best team in the league.
Yeah.
And the amount of chances to give teams up, Liverpool should clearly batter them.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a game between a team that gives up more chances than anyone else against a team who's better at creating chances than anyone else than Liverpool.
Yeah, so it has got 0-0 written all over it. Yeah.
But somehow they haven't beaten them this season, so maybe they won't again.
So if we look at City's running, which starts tomorrow, Villa, Palace away, Luton at home, Brighton away, Forest away, Wolves at home, Fulham away, Tottenham away, West Ham at home. I feel like, not to be all pro City, but I feel like it's been talked about Liverpool having the easiest running, and I think City might have. Obviously, the Champions League is around that, and the FA Cup semis and whatever. But you know, Tottenham away will be tricky, especially if it's last week of the season. But they did get that win there in the FA Cup. Forest away, Forest will be scrapping. Brighton away, it's a bit similar to Liverpool. Like Brighton away feels like they make it really uncomfortable for you to play against them, but they do offer up.
Yeah, and I feel like the way Brighton play under De Zerbi is great for City.
Yeah,
he will give you those spaces, and he won't do an Arteta and shut it down.
Just before we finish off this section, we should mention the continuing row over season ticket prices and various ticketing issues that fan groups have raised that reared its head again on Sunday at the match.
So there was a banner unveiled maybe 10 or 15 minutes before kickoff. I think that was when we all noticed it in the press box anyway, in the South Stand, complaining about those prices. Record profits but record prices, stop exploiting our loyalty, I think it was.
So
that came up, and a few of us tweeted about it and gave us some publicity. And then when I looked up, it had gone. But a few others around me in the press box had seen it and said a steward had gone in and removed it. And obviously, you know, we asked City about it afterwards, and the view was that it was covering an advertising board and maybe part of the scoreboard, and that's not allowed.
And then also, I think it sort of, it then became that it didn't have the correct fire safety certificate. I mean, I thought it was interesting because that banner was from the 1894 fan group who have sort of taken charge of making sure the atmosphere is as good as it can be and whatever. They work with the club. The club took the banner chose the Arsenal game as it was last season, where it was unveiled for the first time, for this huge, great big banner across the East Stand that said, "I'll follow you everywhere." Sort of thought it was interesting that the club chose to sort of put this message for the fans after 2 weeks of fans being upset at ticket price increases and Guardiola saying, "Yeah, I get it, but as soon as the match starts, they'll support the team." How was the atmosphere?
I mean, it started off well, as it was always going to, and there was a spell in the second half when it got loud, when City kind of responded. For about 10 minutes to start the second half, City responded to being kicked by kicking them back, basically.
Yeah.
And it got loud again there. But it was one of those games where, just, you know, the atmosphere was hard to generate.
And, yeah.
You know, I noticed a few people on social media taking the mick, basically, about the atmosphere. But if that was any game at any ground, the atmosphere was going to go through spells where it was quiet, because it's just, you know, you cannot generate an atmosphere across 90 minutes a game like that, I don't think. And like I say, there were spells where it was loud, where it was good, but inevitably there are spells in a game like that where it's just going to go quiet. And it was the same with the away end. You know, the away end wasn't exactly loud. You couldn't hear the away end constantly. In fact, you very rarely heard them at all until the final whistle. So
yeah,
I think it was one of those games that was, it was lacking kind of that momentum that keeps the fans in it. You know, you always see any game, the atmosphere starts well, then you kind of need the game to help propel the atmosphere along as well. It needs to kind of work in unison, and obviously didn't. There was no momentum from the game to keep it going. And then second half, towards the end, it just got so edgy, I think, and so nervy that, in a way, and you see it every game, fans are almost forgetting to sing, that it's so tight and tense. So, you know, it was good in places, but I think inevitably, you know, it wasn't rocking for 90 minutes, but it's never going to be for a game like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and you know, I think, you know, Pep's right. I don't think anyone's thinking about season ticket prices once the game starts.
Yeah.
But fair enough to make the point before. And you know, removing the banner just seems another kind of unnecessary.
It made it a bigger story than it would have done.
Yeah.
Yeah, not great. And, we'll see where that goes. I think the renewal window is until Thursday, so we'll see what happens with that. We'll cover that on the site, and that is the end of part two, but we'll be back in part three to look ahead to the Aston Villa game. Welcome back to part three of today's pod, and we're talking about Aston Villa. Now, Gary Neville said on Sunday after the Arsenal game that Arsenal had done something, they'd sort of restricted City like no other team had done. I mean, you can forgive him for forgetting it, but I can't remember a game where City were as inferior as their defeat at Aston Villa in December. They were just monstered all over the pitch.
Yeah. I mean, no one has done it better.
No.
Certainly since that first Pep title-winning season, no one has done it better. I mean, they had two shots that night and they were both from the same attack.
Yeah.
After about 11, 12 minutes, was it? After that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an extraordinary game.
Villa had 22 shots. But I think City's two were the least from any Guardiola side ever.
Ever.
So yeah. Barcelona, Bayern. And like Liverpool have dominated City in games. Real Madrid, Bayern Munich have had their moments. Mm. That over 90 minutes, that felt like the most complete destruction of a City side.
Yeah, totally. And it's not just the fact that they only had two shots. It's the fact that Villa then had 22.
Yeah.
You know, you could, if they restricted City to two shots but have five of their own.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be like, well, they've just shut the game down. But they didn't. They had created loads of chances.
Yeah.
And they scored, was it like 78 minutes, something like that? It was late-ish, wasn't it?
Yeah.
When they finally scored.
74, yeah.
74. And, you know, not quite as extreme, but it's kind of like I was saying about the Brentford United game the other night. You felt Villa deserved to score that game, because to have drawn that game for the number they'd done on City.
Villa were robbed with a 1-0 win.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, yeah. They deserved a lot more, the level of their domination. But that was Villa at their absolute peak, their absolute zenith this season. They've not been as good since. And of course, City haven't lost a game in
any competition
since
that day?
No. Well, it was sort of after that game that the players all sort of banged their heads together and said, this isn't good enough.
Yeah.
And 23 games later, here we are. How many points are City ahead of Aston Villa? 5 points with a game in hand.
City have got a game in hand,
yeah. But fair to say, kind of after that defeat, because it was the fourth game in a row they hadn't won, and City were kind of, you sort of thinking, like, they really need to get cracking, turn this from a top four battle into a sort of Premier League title race. And, you know, it's credit to Villa and Spurs that they've made the league so much more competitive this season. I don't know if you saw Postecoglou this week asked about United.
No.
They sort of said, United are 8 points behind you. Do you think they can catch you? He said, well, we're 8 points behind City. Do you think we can catch them?
Nicely done.
Just sort of, he's kind of making a habit of needling reporters by pointing out some silly questions. And But it's true.
Yeah.
And we've mentioned that City have no win this season against a top five side. There can't be any excuses. They need to beat Aston Villa on Wednesday if they are to stay in this title race.
Yeah, absolutely. They have to. I mean, the interesting thing with City is what do you think they need? Do you think they need 9 wins? Do you think 8 wins might do it?
I think they have to aim for 9 and maybe 8 wins maybe and a draw when kind of the, you know, a bit like last season, they ended up winning it by 5, but they threw in the towel for the last 3 games because they'd already won it. Yeah. Maybe, you know, they get a bit of pressure later, but they have to put as much pressure as possible on.
Yeah. So if we say maybe they can get away with 8, that the one they don't win has to be late on, I think, doesn't it? Like the Tottenham away.
Tottenham away.
So lose it now and see.
If they can go into the final week and say we need 4 points to win the league, then fantastic. Yeah. But
The other issue for them is that on FA Cup, Liverpool play on FA Cup semi-final weekend. I don't know if Arsenal do as well or not.
I think they do. No, they don't, because they would have played Chelsea, I think.
Right, okay. But certainly Liverpool do, so obviously, City will have that game in hand, but you'd always rather have points on the board. So City don't want to drop points now and then not play that weekend and see Liverpool win.
No, and it's always about putting pressure on the table as well.
Yeah.
And City play the day before Liverpool. So Liverpool's got a home match against Sheffield United. You would expect them to win.
Yeah.
If City can beat Villa and at least go level on points with Liverpool, it puts more pressure on.
It does, and it's maybe more importantly, we'll add pressure to the weekend if they could beat Villa, beat Palace.
Palace Saturday, 30:30.
Yeah.
It's 30:30. 12:30. Tell someone's enjoyed their Easter. Before Liverpool go to United at Old Trafford, that would be,
that's the ideal scenario, isn't
it? That would be the stuff of, you know, serial title winners to say,
we're here.
Come back. Yeah. Come back at us.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Let's rule out the possibility of Liverpool not beating Sheffield United, but we wouldn't rule out the possibility of not beating Man United. And if City can get level on points, it does add to the pressure.
And also, not just Liverpool, like Arsenal have got Luton at home, but on Saturday 5:30 they're away at Brighton.
Yeah.
So if City can end the week either level with Liverpool or ahead of Arsenal, like, it will be a really successful week for them.
Yeah.
But they need to beat Villa and they need to beat Palace.
They've got to beat Villa and Palace. And Villa won't be easy because, like we say, I mean, that performance has got to be lingering in City minds.
Yeah.
And sometimes when that happens, you just wonder, do they have our number? Is there something about the way they play that causes us problems?
I mean, we'll speak to Guardiola today. It'd be really interesting to see, like, how much that game will form part of their build-up. You know, like, usually they sell the pass is the pass, forget about it. But, you know, will they watch that game and say, look how much better they were than you.
Yeah.
Look how much they did here. Look how many problems John McGinn caused you all game. Or will they say, you know what, we don't want to, which is what teams usually do against City. We don't want to watch that footage because it just shows us getting battered.
The interesting thing is that it was such a one-sided game that you've got to feel that there was something within it that gave Villa the edge rather than them having a good day and City having a bad day.
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be something there that City have to learn from and change you know, if Villa had won that game 1-0 and they both have 10 shots, you just say, well, that's one of those things.
Yeah.
But it's the sheer level of domination in that game makes you think that there's something within it that caused it, because City clearly had the better players, but Villa were just absolutely dominant. They battered them, didn't they?
Yeah.
So you've got to think, I mean, I'm sure Guardiola would have watched it several times and his analysts would have watched it several times and come up with a plan, but it does feel like one of those games where City have to change something from what they did at Villa Park to kind of have more control of the game.
Yeah. And it's an 8:15 kickoff. I think that might help the atmosphere. I mean, Villa last season was the first game after the charges, so it was like properly hostile, which worked in City's favour. I think this one, you know, evening kickoffs are always kind of the better atmospheres. I think it will be tough, but like we say, City are just at that point now. They've got to win every game, and even if they don't have to, they've got to play like they've got to win every game.
Play like they intend to win every game, and like I say, I mean that should help the atmosphere and the supporters as well, really, because City fans should know that it's probably going to require 9 out of 9,
yeah,
maybe 8 out of 9, but it there's so little margin for error,
yeah,
that you know every game. You know, I hate this cliche, but every game is essentially a cup final.
Yeah, but that is how the players treat it. Like, daft as banal as it sounds, football is a banal game at times, and it's really simple. And it is at that point where you lose, you're knocked out.
Yeah, and Guardiola always says from August onwards at times, that our rivals aren't going to drop points. You know, we've seen it again. Liverpool and Arsenal aren't going to drop points. I think they both will.
Yeah,
but. But they might not drop more than two.
If City draw tomorrow night and Liverpool win, that's 5 points plus goal difference. Yeah.
I don't think
you're asking Liverpool to lose two of the last eight, which
I don't think will happen.
No.
So you kind of are at that point now where they might drop points, but that still doesn't give City any margin for error. They've both got to drop points in two games, really, to give City any margin for error. So.
Yeah, and that is City with a perfect 9 out of 9.
City with a perfect 9 out of 9. So on this occasion, I think it is the case where these are all cup finals, really, and unless both of those teams slip up unexpectedly somewhere, you kind of are at the point where you feel like if City don't win a league game at the moment, they are pretty much done.
Yeah, and also I think like we've just been waiting for that big moment from City, and everyone hoped it would be Arsenal, and it wasn't that, and hoped it would be Liverpool, and it wasn't that, and. Yeah, they need the confidence from a big win.
There hasn't been that statement win yet. No. That you kind of get in every City title winning season.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was from this international break, well, probably before it as well, but mostly from this international break last year, where, you know, the Etihad wasn't a fortress. It was an actually stronghold. You know, Liverpool 4-1, Arsenal 4-1, Bayern 3-0, Real 4-0.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't a statement performance in the treble. There was several statement performances.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the league this season, you couldn't really pick out, you know, maybe one of the derbies, but United...
I know, but I always... I always think United don't count.
You know, in the league, certainly, there hasn't been a win where you're like, that's a league, that's the win, that's the result of champions.
Yeah.
Or anything like that. So, you know, maybe...
Well, I think we've talked into this week being the week where they establish themselves. Yeah. So we'll maybe see. Just before we go, City's treble winners together, something like that. Their Netflix documentary is out this morning on Tuesday morning, 8 a.m. Have you watched all 6 episodes yet?
I haven't. No, I've been watching CBeebies this morning.
Oh,
but I know you have, because you got them earlier than everyone else.
Oh, it was so exciting getting them early. I mean, not just that, but also seeing what else can I see. But no, it was strictly that, and you know, heavily watermarked, so I couldn't flog it. But it's interesting. It's an interesting insight into the season. There's a mega row not a mega row, a mega rant from Guardiola when they lose at Southampton, which is very much worth your time. Just 3-4 minutes of him losing the plot. And as ever with him, like, it's not just what he says, it's like the 10-second stare around the dressing room, the heavy sarcasm. You know, it would have been better if I was in it, I think, the whole documentary, but sadly not. You know, maybe next time.
I think next time. You get your own next season.
Yeah, yeah. And there are a few things, because it's been produced by the club, so yeah. It's Netflix have paid for sort of a club-produced product, which is interesting in its own right. But,
great for PSR.
Yeah, yeah. You don't get some of the things that maybe should be in it. Yeah. Like, I mean, João Cancelo, there's a big fanfare around City signing Sergio Gomez. And there's no mention of João Cancelo suddenly disappearing from the picture. When, you know, Cancelo leaving was a huge moment.
Yeah.
And although you could cast it, like, I can understand that he might not want to broadcast some of the footage that was probably captured that led to him leaving. But just discuss it, because it was a huge moment. And, you know, if you're wanting to push City and Guardiola's leadership, like, it is a bit monster call to take out someone who's been one of your best players and just say, he can go and join one of our Champions League rivals, play against us in the Champions League. I don't care. I'd rather play an 18-year-old than have him here in this dressing room making everyone worse.
Yeah. We showed the value of what Guardiola believes in, doesn't it? And that you've got to be a good teammate, and Cancelo wasn't in his view.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, maybe they'd have filmed it if his situation was different, obviously.
He's still a City player, so
maybe if he'd gone permanently,
despite his best efforts,
we might have seen.
Have to protect some kind of value on him.
But no, I will be watching it. Like, even though it's produced by the club, there's still going to interesting tidbits in there. I know that we were talking about it on Sunday, and someone else had watched it early, and you will know who this is, but one of our press room colleagues had already screenshotted his favourite bit and showed it me, and it was when John Stones and Erling Haaland were talking about how good Yorkshire was.
Oh, Yorkshire. Oh, right. Because there's another bit where there's a bonsai tree. There's a lot of chat around a bonsai tree, which one of our editors was not too pleased about having to read. But I will say as well, because we were both in Istanbul, and the last episode around Istanbul will bring back memories for anyone who was there. I think there might be a few tears for some fans watching it, and there's certainly a lot of tears from the players, but it was quite a special moment. But, you know, still not as good as anything you'll see on the MEN or on this podcast. So we will be back on Friday to discuss the Villa game and look ahead to the Palace game and see what the injury situation is. Please subscribe and tell us how brilliant we are, and give us 5-star reviews, and Easter eggs if you want, post them in, we'll have anything. And thanks for listening once again. We'll be back on Friday.